BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, AD Smith. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
What are you doing here?
I am here to help out with a little bit of sign language, and we are going to be delving into a brand new bunch of words that have come out within the British Sign Language, all to do with LGBTQ+.
Oh, yes, and that's later on in the programme. But sticking with language, actually, that's a useful, helpful way to get into this. Neurospicy, we talked about this last time, because you're a bit neurospicy, aren't you?
I am. I've got Tourette's, I've got ADHD, a mixed bag of wonderful things.
Right, so you promised me, because you're a bit of a drinks expert, you promised me you're going to do me a neurospicy margarita. Did you make one? How did it taste? Was it amazing?
I did make one. It took several variations. I put a little bit of chili in there, a little bit of jalapeno, some gorgeous reposado tequila, a bit of agave syrup, and of course, not forgetting the lime. And it was simply beautiful. Next time I come in, I'll bring you one.
Oh, please do. I need to taste this neurospicy margarita. Right, on with the show.
I am proud of who I am.
When I was younger, I was told I could be anything.
Being deaf, if nothing wrong, it's such a joy to be deaf.
Me, live in the Apollo, hosting!
I'm on the autism spectrum, so I don't really care about social codes.
They're bringing into the question, should your child exist when he's just on the swings next to you?
Wouldn't it be great if everybody had someone to speak to where you could offload all of your week's grief?
From this snazzy new studio in London, I am telling you, it smells like a showroom. This is Access All, the BBC's home for disability and mental health. I'm Emma Tracy, and this week I'm going to be talking to the Wheel Housewife of Essex. Get it? Wheel. She's a wheelchair user. Housewife. She's a mum and she's married. Yeah. Getting it? Making it sense? Also, I'm going to be learning the brand new shiny BSL sign for thruple. Thruple. Useful, I would say. You might be listening to us on Five Live, and if you are, and if you like what you hear, please subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts from. And then we will come down onto your device every single week. Lucky you. British Sign Language has always had a rich vocabulary, and it's always evolving, just like our society and what we talk about in English is. English LGBTQ plus vocabulary has been growing and changing, and it's broader nowadays and it's being used much more openly than before. But BSL signs haven't evolved just as quickly or in the same way. So some very, very clever people in UCL, University College London, have got together with Deaf Rainbow UK, a deaf LGBTQ organisation, to develop 20 new signs all around this area to address the lack of LGBTQ specific vocabulary. Dr. Patrick Rosenberg from UCL was part of the project, and he's here and he's speaking through his interpreter, Karen Newby. Patrick, you're so welcome. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
It's great to have you here. And also, I've got AD Smith with me, friend of the programme, part of the LGBTQ community. Hi, AD. Hi again.
Hello. Always lovely to see you.
Oh, lovely to see you too. And you're here to help because I actually can't see. So you're going to help me to understand some of these new signs, to describe them to me. And you've got some questions for Dr. Patrick as well, haven't you?
I do indeed. I will be your homosexual set of eyes today, darling.
Amazing and fabulous. Thank you so much. Right, so back to the story of these new signs. In November 2023, video clips of the new signs were added to the Deaf Rainbow UK glossary webpage. Patrick, can you tell us what some of these new signs are?
Well, at UCL, we have DECAL, the Deafness, Cognition and Language Research Centre, and some of the staff there got together and we saw a funding opportunity that came up, which was to improve equality, diversity and inclusion there at UCL. And the aim was to improve relationships between UCL LGBTQ plus staff and the rest of the staff community. And so we decided to work with an organisation called Deaf Rainbow UK, who already had some signs established, but We needed more because, as you've already explained, the vocabulary has moved on significantly in the hearing community. And so we developed these signs and, well, fingers crossed, we'll see what happens to those signs now that they've been released on the community. We'll see what the uptake is.
So you're hoping that the deaf community will embrace these signs and use them for those terms?
Yeah, well, I mean, who knows? We'll see what happens. It's the first attempt. The thing about language planning and using new vocabulary is you can't force people to adopt this. You know, language has to evolve organically. So you can have language planning strategies to create new signs, but then there's no guarantee that those signs will be taken up positively by the community. So you just have to let them go, see what happens, and some of them will run and some of them will drop out of use. And then, you know, you can develop more and again, go through the same process.
I love the idea of language planning and creating new words. Okay, so there is a long list of 20 signs, which AD and I are now going to read out the English words.
Well, when I was looking at the videos online, Emma, and when I looked at the word gay, there was a particularly handsome man in that video. So I think I'll go with gay as my first one. Do you know what?
Yeah, so you've got your flat hand with the other hand with the thumb up on it. Emma, put your left hand flat with the palm up and then take your right hand and make a thumbs up shape with your right hand.
I don't even know what a thumbs up is nearly.
And then place the right hand on top of the left palm and wiggle it backs and forwards.
Good job.
Okay.
Yeah.
And why
like a cat walking along.
Why is it that?
I think, so the other thing is to remember when we talk about sign language, is that signs can be arbitrary. There doesn't necessarily have to be a reason why they're shaped like they are. So some signs are not iconic. So iconic being that they visually represent the thing that they're referring to. But some signs are completely arbitrary and they just are what they are. Same with spoken language. You know, why do we use the words we use? They don't look like or sound like the thing they depict often. So
that's such a really important thing to remember, because I think it is, I am sort of drawn to ask why a sign is what it is. Whereas like if you look at the word, I don't know, dungeon. Why is it called a dungeon? Why did I say dungeon? I have no idea. But you know what I mean? Like, I would never ask somebody.
It's early for us to talk about dungeons, isn't it?
Why is a word a word? I don't know. Who knows? Right, let's go through a few more of these signs. Thruple.
Oh, yes, thruple. Yes, this is a sign for thruple. So you hold your, if you're right-handed, with your right hand, you hold three fingers out.
Like this.
And so.
Like this?
Three fingers pointing upwards, so your palm facing yourself, okay? And, yeah, keep your pinky down, that's right. So pinky and thumb out of the way, three fingers, and then move, as you move your hand slightly away from you, you close your fingers together.
So three.
Yeah, exactly. Well done.
Three.
Fantastic.
Thank you. I'm loving this.
So there must have been a lot of challenges with the lack of vocabulary for the LGBT community. Can you describe what some of those have been?
Well, the deaf community is already a marginalised community, and the deaf LGBT community is even more marginalised. So their opportunities to develop and understand their identity are more limited, and that leads to many more instances of mental well-being issues within the community. And so creating spaces to consider vocabulary gives people a chance to understand themselves better and to engage more with other people if the language is more suited to them. And so creating new signs, well, you know, these concepts in and of themselves are complex. They're not straightforward often. And so we needed to think about them in much greater depth. And so that's what we did in order to support the community better.
And how long has it taken for this process to happen?
The whole process of creating signs was around about 3 months, because there was a planning stage prior to that. We had to get people in place. We had to have a survey. We wanted to invite members from the community to come in, and we did that on three different occasions. So we got feedback from within the community before we then filmed and edited in time for the launch party. So
a launch party, I like that idea.
Oh yeah, it was really fantastic. And we had a deaf drag act at the party to introduce the new signs to the audience.
Brilliant.
It was really lovely. You know, you don't see deaf drag very much out there in the mainstream. So it was a good opportunity for people to actually see that deaf drag artists exist. So it was really lovely.
Yeah. But just to say, these signs are not official vocabulary, are they?
Well, like with any vocabulary in any language, it's down to the people using it. You know, and then the more it goes into general usage, then it would be accepted into some kind of dictionary. So, you know, we had to launch these things into the community. And some people have their own views about the signs, and that's perfectly normal. Some people disagree with some of the signs that we introduced, and some people love them. So, you know, it's the same with the spoken languages of the world. Words pop up into use, and sometimes they disappear quite quickly, and sometimes they get completely adopted, and they're in use for many, many decades.
Was there any particularly divisive sign? What was the sign that got most kind of arguments going or whatever?
There were a few where there were some arguments. For example, the word queer. There are some signs already in use, but some of them can seem a bit degrading, like the one that is sort of at the waist with a hand moving downwards. But, you know, some people like them and want to keep them, don't want to lose them. But some community members wouldn't agree with retaining older signs.
So the waist moving downwards, what does that?
Yeah, you sort of hold your spread hand out and your thumb bounces off your hip.
Okay.
Is it that
what they used to say, like limp wristed?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it would appear, some people would say, to have negative connotations. But some people use it, so it's fine. If you're content and comfortable to use it, then keep it. It's not for us to decide what people should or shouldn't do. You know, some people say they've reclaimed the sign in a positive way. So
it's interesting because I think in general terms in language, there are some words that are looked upon as derogatory. And it's obviously the same in sign language.
And actually, disabled people sometimes say they've reclaimed words too. Patrick, do you see it that way?
I agree.
AD, you have some additional questions.
I always have questions. So my next question. So Emma and I always talk about dating lives and our stories and this, that and the other. And I always fill her in on my dating shenanigans. And I am interested to know, it's first of all quite difficult in the LGBT world to date. And second of all, to have a disability, it's even more difficult to date. So are there any stories that you've heard from your LGBT, well, our LGBTQ plus community, but specifically within the deaf community, of the hardships that they face?
Options can be limited. It was funny, this morning I was having a think about deaf dating experiences. And so there was a deaf event where many people got together, and I met this guy on the first night, and now we're married. And what's interesting is that the thing that brought us together was being deaf. It was a deaf event, people there from different parts of the world, and we just happened to meet each other there. So it can be really overwhelming for single men, generally. It can be funny as well, quite comical. But, you know, there are a plethora of different experiences. And if you want to meet other gay deaf men, then obviously the dating pool is smaller and, you know, expectations may be greater. What's your dating life like?
Lord, how much time do you have?
Well, would you go for another neurospicy?
Yeah, so neurospicy is a new term that is being really supported and loved by the neurodiverse community because we just like that word. So, yes, I would go for someone else who is neurodiverse or neurospicy. And I'm thinking perhaps my future husband has Tourette's and ADHD as well.
Who knows? I need to know, Dr. Patrick, how your interpreter is signing neurospicy.
No, well, the interpreter is signing a sign that we have for neuro that's already in use, and the sign for spicy, as in hot food, spicy food. Okay, so you take your right hand with your index and middle finger pointing out, so all the other fingers curled in, and put it up to your forehead, and then pull it back from your forehead to the back of your head, around the side of your head. Yeah, neuro.
Okay, and spicy?
And spicy, so your fingers are wiggling, all your five fingers are wiggling in front of your mouth to indicate hot food.
Hot.
Spicy. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Patrick Rosenberg and AD Smith and interpreter Karen Newby, thank you so much for joining me. I've learned so much and it's been a lot of fun.
Love it. Absolutely love it. And we all now know how to say neuro spicy.
And AD, thank you so much, as always, for joining me for this item.
My lovely, I will see you very soon with a whole load of neurospicy cocktails.
Yum, yum. There have been some cracking learning disability related stories in the news this week. And who better to talk them through with me than Scott Watkin in 2009 became the learning disability co-czar. So he worked for the government on learning disability issues. And he is now head of inclusion at Seeability, a charity for people with visual impairments and learning disabilities. And he's with me now. Hi, Scott. How are you?
I am. I'm really good. It's nice to speak to you again.
Yes, because we have spoken over the years, haven't we?
We have, yes, on many occasions. And I'm thrilled to be here today and delighted to talk to you.
Oh, well, we are absolutely delighted to have you. Shall we just jump straight in with the first story and see how we get on? So we heard recently that Mar Garthalon is the first person with Down syndrome to become a parliamentarian in Spain. She was elected to the Regional Assembly in Valencia this week. And Garthalon might be the first in Europe to have achieved this, according to Spain's Down Syndrome Federation. And what I love about Mar Garthalon is that she has worked her way up. She's 45 now. She's been in politics for 20 years. She's been working on inclusive policy, and she's also headed up a charity for families with children who have Down syndrome as well. So she's worked really hard on disability stuff, and now look where she is. It's really impressive, isn't it, Scott?
I think it's absolutely amazing. I think it's the power of self-advocacy and people in Spain being able to use their own voice to get their voices heard. And I think it's a really exciting opportunity for Mar to be able to influence the Spanish government and to influence the Spanish people, the first person with Down syndrome to do that in Europe. That is absolutely amazing.
You worked for the government and you have a learning disability. And when you were the co-czar, what were the things that were challenging about someone with a learning disability doing things around politics and around government? And, you know, what were the things that were difficult?
Well, I think for me, it was about how you represented everyone's views and with a learning disability across the country and their family's views as well. And how you took those to the minister, because I think what ministers in government like to have is the solutions to the problems as well. They don't like to always work out the problems for themselves.
Okay, so you have to bring them the problem and the solution at the same time. And what about day-to-day work? Did you have someone to help you? Do you think Mar will have maybe a support person or a co-MP with her?
I think Mar will have a co-MP with her, yes. So the one thing I had is I was lucky enough to have a whole team of people around me to brief me and to be able to tell me what I was doing, where I was going, who I was going to be speaking to, and to tell me how I should be directing that conversation. However, I know, Emma, that what they tell me and what I say are two different things.
So you're your own person and you always will be.
Absolutely.
Another story in the news this week was about Lily Mills. And Lily Mills is off to the Australian Open to play in a learning disability tennis tournament. That's pretty impressive too, isn't it? You're all getting out there doing your thing.
Oh, absolutely. We are all getting out there doing our thing. And Lily is an amazing lady to being able to get to do that.
And here's a clip of Lily from the BBC News at 10.
Is tennis the most important thing in your life, do you think?
Yes.
Why?
Through tennis, I have lots more friends. It gives me confidence. It gives me an opportunity.
And you're very good at it.
Thanks.
Actually, Lily's mum said on the news piece that I watched that one of the reasons Lily loves tennis is because she's better at it than anybody else. And that's really interesting, isn't it? Because when you're disabled, sometimes it feels like it's quite hard to find something that you're better at than everybody else.
Absolutely. It does feel hard.
It is. What are you very, very good at, would you say? What are you better at than anybody else with a learning disability or without a learning disability?
I think I'm really good at speaking up for people and really good at challenging people to achieve their goals and to making sure that people get that right support. I used to be really, really good at my athletics and running and achieving those goals as well. I was very inspired by these top athletes in the Paralympics and thinking one day I might get there, but unfortunately I didn't.
And was that because you didn't practice enough?
That is because I got a job, basically.
And you can relate to both Lily and Tamar, can't you? You feel like your story is similar in a way.
Absolutely, yes. So I think we've had all have very similar journeys where we've had to all knock down barriers and smash it really out of the park to try and get what we need at the right time. But what I would say to people with a learning disability or people with Down syndrome is that actually you can achieve what you want. You just got to put the hard work into doing it.
Well, you're smashing it as well, Scott. And I know you were told you wouldn't be able to do lots of things that you've done as well. So thank you so much for coming on and chatting through this week's brilliant news stories with me. And hopefully we'll get to speak to you again sometime.
Thank you, Emma. Lovely to see you.
If you spend some time on Instagram or TikTok in amongst all those unlikely air fryer recipes and pictures of cats, you may have come across Nina Tame. Nina only started talking about disability on social media in 2018, but she's since turned it into a job, which is pretty impressive. She's fiercely honest, she's funny, she's naughty online, and we are here for it. So let's get to know Nina a little bit better. Nina, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
What are the most regular things that you make posts about?
I mean, I feel like primarily my page kind of is sort of 50% sort of, I'd like to think, kind of done in a humorous way, like posts directed at non-disabled people about, you know, disability. And I feel like 50% of my posts are aimed at disabled people, just about kind of, you know, not being afraid to take up space. How do we deal with the intrusive questions that often come with disability, even down to things like, you know, showing people how to kind of pass a wheelchair user on the street. Because like most of the time when I see somebody and they're coming towards me and they see me, more importantly, coming towards them, people will literally like jump out sometimes into this like road to get out of my way. And it's kind of like little things like that I talk about, the little microaggressions, I guess. I had a guy once who pushed himself up against his van. Mm-hmm. So his face and his hands were against his van. It's, you know, my chair's pretty big, but it's not, you know, it's not ginormous.
Yeah. You said the word microaggression. That's a very big, scary word.
Well, one of the things that I really don't like is when a stranger will come up to me, you know, bought my wheelchair, whether, you know, whatever mobility aid, and then ask me what's wrong with me, you know, what's wrong with you, what's happened to you, what have you done? They just sort of want to know this information. And when I used to talk to sort of the non-disabled people in my life about it, they would tell me that I was kind of overreacting, that, well, actually these strangers are just being really nice to you, you know, just answer them and all of this. And it wasn't until I spoke to kind of disabled people that they were like, oh yeah, you know, we hate that as well. And I say the term kind of microaggression because I remember watching a YouTube video about it once. It was about, like, you know, a gnat bite might not hurt that much, but if you're continually being bitten by a gnat, it kind of builds up and builds up.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a stranger asking me a personal medical question, whether it's a stranger shouting across the street, like some hilarious bit of banter about, you know, have I got a license to drive my wheelchair or whatever it is. If it was an isolated incident, you'd probably just laugh it off and be like, this really weird thing happened to me. This stranger come and asked me my medical information. But when it's happening to you kind of every single time you leave the house.
It's the drip, drip, isn't it? It's the drip, drip effect.
Yeah, exactly. And then these little things kind of build up and then people sort of wonder why. I always feel like disabled people are just constantly told that we're angry or aggressive or something else. And it's like, why do you think we get so cross?
Yeah. So you're going to get a variety of different types of comments. And we've spoken to Rosie Jones about trolls. We've spoken to other disabled women, particularly about the kind of the trolling on social media. Do you get that and how do you deal with it?
Yeah, so if you'd asked me a few months ago, I might have said, oh, it's not that bad. And then I had a post of mine go, I guess, yeah, go viral. It got sort of over 1 million plays. And it was a really short post. I had glued some tiny little spikes, what you'd get on like a jacket or something, little metal spikes. And I glued them along this strip and put it on the back of my chair in reference to the fact that sometimes people will literally come up and just grab me and push my chair.
So you made something that might hurt their hand a little bit, just a tiny bit.
It was more of a case of if somebody sees that, they might, because I don't have handles on my chair. Because I thought, like, I used to, and then this happened to me where people would push me a few times and I was like, I won't get handles, and then they won't try and push me. Apparently it makes no difference. People will still try and push you out of the way. Now, obviously these aren't actual, you know, sharp spikes, but it was more the kind of visual of, you know, don't touch type thing.
Yeah.
So it was a short sort of, you know, literally a 10-second video. Oh, the comments. So for me, I am, you know, I would say I'm kind of mid-size. I mean, I'd sort of count as plus size in this country, but that's because our shops are all ridiculous and what they consider plus size is, you know. But I'm a fat woman and I'm perfectly okay with that, very happy with that. But those were my comments. It was just endless comments just calling me fat. There was a lot of, oh, well, if I can't push you, I'll kick you down the stairs then.
Whoa, ableist comments about actually doing you harm.
Yeah, I would say there was about 600 comments, I think.
Wow.
And do you know, and it really did bother me at first. At first I was like, and then after kind of just reading them for a solid however long, it really did. I had a real kind of couple of days, like just appalling mental health, just really kind of took it far too much, sort of, just took it on board. And then I kind of had a big cry and I got out of that and had to really kind of reason with myself that for the most part, these commenters are just, well, not for the most part, anybody who puts something spiteful on somebody else's page isn't a happy person, isn't a content person.
I'm going to just quickly go on to the fact that you've got four boys, yes. A disabled mum of four boys. And, you know, we talk a lot about the difficulties around being a disabled person and those difficulties being, as you've often said as well, the society basically and other people's attitudes. But what would you say are the best things about being a disabled parent? And one of your kids is disabled as well. So parenting, being a disabled parent of a disabled child as well.
Yeah. So I was born disabled, but I've only used a wheelchair sort of in the last 4 years, 5 years, however long. But basically with my sort of older children, although I was still disabled, I was walking around on two legs. So I always say that I've parented on legs and I've parented on wheels. And as you say, for me, the challenges that come with it are purely societal based, you know, not being able to access places and all the rest of it. But there is so much joy. You know, my youngest is 6 now, but and he still loves riding around on my lap as much as he can. Like, they take the mick with it, you know, they'll shower and be like, "Mummy, can I just like sit on your lap and you take me to my bedroom to get my pajamas on?" I'm like, you've got working legs. You need to make the most of them. But it's just, it's nice. You know, they think my wheelchair is fun. Like, you know, it's got wheels. Kids love wheels. Like, they just think it's the best thing ever. And they've never viewed it in that kind of pitying way. And for me, just being around the kids and, you know, they're the main people that just treat me exactly as who I am. You know, I'm just me.
Yeah, warts and all, and they take advantage of it well, I'm sure. Mine have a little bit of that too.
Oh, they massively do. Whenever we play a game where I'm chasing them around the house, they're straight up the stairs. Like,
Yeah, I haven't been able to catch mine since they were about two. So, but it's all part of the fun. Part of the fun is them knowing that they can absolutely outrun you, and you knowing too, but still playing the game anyway.
It is. We did it yesterday. Whenever we're at the top, even down a hill, they still manage to beat me. I start off strong and then they catch me up. But, you know, just things like that. And I can see other people sometimes. Me and my youngest were at the top of this like slope yesterday, just ready to absolutely race down it. And I can see other people kind of looking and smiling, and because I feel like it just, that in itself challenges people's ideas about disability. Oh, she's smiling. She's happy. Her child is happy. You know, they're... Yeah. And it's not despite of. And I think, like, I mean, having a disabled kid, I mean, he was like, he changed my life, really. I mean, all my children changed my life. But having a child with the same disability as me, when he was born, it instantly, like, my disability looked beautiful on him. And then I was like, well, surely I can accept the idea that it's beautiful on me as well. And he was like a real starting point for me, you know, sort of embracing my disability, feeling neutral about my body as opposed to berating it, because there was no way he was ever going to hear me berate a part of my body like that he has the same, like just absolutely no way. And it was, and even like when he sort of started school, and we'd always sort of told him, you know, you can, if somebody asks you about your disability, you can kind of answer how you want, you know, make up a story if you want, whatever you want. And then he'd come back from school and just be so tired of people constantly asking. And then I was like, he doesn't have to answer. What? This is actually a really rude private question. Of course he doesn't have to answer. And, you know, and we said, you can just tell people to bugger off if you want, because they're being nosy. It was that realization that, oh, neither do I. And then it was like the first kind of post I tentatively put up on my Instagram about disability was around intrusive questions. And I think I was expecting a load of backlash and just didn't get it. I just got people going, oh, yeah, we hate answering those questions too. And I was like, I found my people. You know, I grew up being pretty much the only disabled person I knew. I tried to hide my disability. I always internalized everything. I thought I was the problem, all of this stuff. And being able to bring him up from such a young age to understand what ableism is, to understand his disability, to understand what he's potentially going to face, and giving him the tools to be able to deal with intrusive questions and, you know, just to be able to empower him has just been, it's been such a privilege.
Oh, I love that. And that's such a beautiful way to end this interview. Nina Tame, thank you very much for speaking to me. Where can people find you online?
Nina Tame, across the board.
Nina, thank you. Thank you so much, Nina. I absolutely love that chat. That's it for this week. You can email us. We're emailable, accessall@bbc.co.uk. We're on X, formerly known as Twitter, @BBCAccessAll. And I tell you what, we read every one of your messages and we absolutely love hearing from you. You can subscribe to us on BBC Sounds or wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you next week. Same time, same place, more disability and mental health. See ya.
Newscast is the unscripted chat behind the headlines.
It's informed, but informal.
We pick the day's top stories and we find experts who can really dig into them.
We use our colleagues in the newsroom and our contacts.
Some people pick up the phone rather faster than others.
We sometimes literally run around the BBC building to grab the very best guests.
Join us for daily news chats
to get you ready for today's conversations.
Newscast. Listen on BBC Sounds.